bin Laden has been involved in for many years. So, you know, the fact that there have been ties between Osama bin Laden and the CIA is incontrovertible. We know that's the case. It still does not establish that the U.S. government policymakers knew this was going to happen before it happened. And I think, you know, if we step back and we look at what's at stake here, we're faced with a situation of extreme militarism in our society. We have U.S. troops that have been mobilized. They're in Afghanistan. There's been enormous damage inflicted on Afghanistan, paid for by U.S. taxpayers. Palestinians are under attack from Israel, with those attacks paid for by the U.S. government. We got U.S. troops in or about to go to a number of other countries, Georgia, in the former Soviet Republic, the Philippines, on and on and on, Yemen. And in the face of all that, and in the face of what we know to be the U.S. government's role in supporting human rights violations in many countries inflicted by the government, and all kinds of information that we have, we're invited instead to take this leap from a set of facts to an unsustained conclusion. And I think that it's important that rather than us kind of say, well, gee, because we have so many suspicions and we wouldn't put it past the U.S. government, therefore we're going to take a position that, you know, this is, we know happened, that there is incontrovertible proof, or the CIA had foreknowledge or whatever. It's a way of, unfortunately, marginalizing progressive forces by taking a position, claiming conclusions that are solid, we're told, that in fact simply aren't supported by the information that's marshaled. So, I mean, it does not come as any revelation to progressives that the CIA has been in bed with very sleazy operators around the planet. That is something that anybody who studied history knows. What I believe we ought to concentrate on is solid reasoning, not conjecture, not inference, not saying that, gee, well, we have all these facts that are feeding into our suspicions, and then not make the proof. I think we need to have a process of solid reasoning that can lead us to solid conclusions. And I think when we hear a lot about anomalies and we talk about how there were warnings and this or that, do we know what kind of warnings were given yesterday or tomorrow? Do we know what was put in sealed envelopes a week ago or a month ago or a year ago that became irrelevant because nothing happened? And I am very concerned that we build a movement that is broad-based, that's solid, that's based on facts and conclusions that flow from the facts. And I think I'll leave it there, even if I haven't used up all my time. I look forward to discussion from there.
Fantastic. Let me remind people, you are tuned to KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara County. We are in our fund drive mode, but we have stepped out of that mode, no pitching and all of that right now, to discuss something that is near to all of us, which is the status of being in a war society, being in a terrored society. And we have taken this opportunity to bring in two voices from the progressive movement that disagree on their outlook on what has happened and what were the causes of 9-1-1. What spawned this is that there is a tape that Michael Rupert has produced, The Truth and Lies of 9-1-1. We are offering it as a premium to you for $120. And what you're going to hear now is the debate around it. And then you'll make up your own mind as to whether you want to call in and pledge. But information is information, and that's what it's all about. Pacifica is about distributing information. And thank God that we have people like Norman Solomon, who is joining us from up north, and Michael Rupert, that is sitting right next to me here in Los Angeles. And for those of you who do not know, Norman Solomon is Associate Affair and also Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. And And Michael Rupert is the publisher of From the Wilderness, a newsletter that is read by tens of members of Congress, has international distribution, and has produced The Truth and Lies of 911. Okay, so let's start with a... Because, Norman, you started... as the contrarian here, I'm going to start with a question for you. When it comes to looking at then the facts and the things that have happened around since September 11th, what do the conclusions lead you to believe versus what Michael Rupert has written?
Well, what I conclude is that we have enormous repression and militarism that's been spawned by these attacks. And as has happened at other times in history, very reactionary and corporate forces have been eager to exploit what occurs. And they're doing that to the hilt. And it's been very beneficial to the Ashcrofts and Bushes and the Cheneys in Washington to take advantage of this, to wave the flag, to get people to drop their objections to other parts of the Republican Party agenda. Democrats in Congress have largely gone along with that process. I think we're dealing with the aftermath of that, which is very serious. And Martin Luther King warned soon after he initiated the Poor People's Campaign against what he called poverty, racism, and militarism, the deadly triplets. Those deadly triplets are with us today. And I think the imperative is for us to look full in the face what has occurred and to build a movement to challenge those forces that are just so destructive here at home and around the planet. I don't believe that it's at all helpful to leap from facts to conclusions not supported by the facts, because what we're up against with incontrovertible reality is so horrendous in and of itself. We don't need to exaggerate the crimes of the CIA. We don't need to exaggerate the crimes of the U.S. government in order to say that we fully reject those policies as they're being implemented, as they continue to be inflicted on the world.
Fantastic. Michael, it's been said that this material marginalizes the progressive position. What is your rebuttal to Norman Solomon?
Well, forget the progressive position for a moment. Definitions have always bothered me when we are confronted with very serious facts, and Norm's sophistry fails on a couple of points. First of all, he waves Noam Chomsky at me like the icon of a dead Christ who is not here in this room to participate in this discussion. I, for one, have been around for 23 years. I'm a victim of death threats and being shot at for witnessing CIA dealing drugs. And I'm tired of having Noam Chomsky define the acceptable outer limits of public discourse in this country. He's an old man at MIT, and he's good friends with John Deutsch, who's on the board at Citibank, which is laundering drug money.
Oh, I see.
If we want to bring him up as a litmus test when he's not in the room, that's kind of like doing the same kind of guilt trip my parents did, from Catholic school. In addition, Noam Chomsky thinks the JFK assassination is irrelevant and doesn't want to talk about a conspiracy when I opened my videotape with a clip of the Zapruder film saying that for 38 years we've had clear and tangible proof that John F. Kennedy was shot from the front and not the back. And what have we done about it? Nothing. That's one of the end results. Now, Norman has probably never been a police officer or a detective or presented a case to a district attorney after you've done your investigation. And the word suggests is used all the time. It's not a weaselly word. It's an intelligent word when you present the evidence suggesting criminal behavior to a district attorney, who will then take that evidence and present it to a trier of facts called a jury. Now, I have given 7 lectures since November the 28th in Portland, 2 at the University of Toronto, 1 in Kerrville, Texas, 1 in Los Angeles, Sacramento, and San Francisco. Packed audiences, standing room only, standing ovation every time, and I have asked every audience whether, based upon the evidence that I presented to them in a 2.5-hour lecture, which I don't have the benefit of now, they believed that the U.S. government had foreknowledge and was complicit in the attacks. And based upon that evidence, every audience has unanimously agreed. And I should add emphatically that I traveled to Washington in December to shoot interviews for this videotape, Truth and Lies of 9/11, and got exclusive interviews, which are in the tape, with Congresswoman Barbara Lee, one of the bravest women in this country, with Representative Ron Paul, a right-wing, gun-toting, right-to-life Republican, who gave me a great interview on the loss of more than a third of our Bill of Rights in the Patriot Act and the government complicity, and Cynthia McKinney, a good friend and a very brave voice, and they chose to be in this videotape. So to use, if you want to talk about the facts, let's talk about the facts. I say that when anybody watches this videotape, when you see the facts that I have documented, and I guess you're not challenging them either, you can come to the same conclusion that I do and everybody else has come to.
Well, yeah, if I could jump in, people could come to those conclusions, or they could come to different conclusions. I mean, I know of many speakers of many stripes who can say they had a packed audience of 1,000 people who adored what they had to say, as well as there are many publications, including, for instance, Rupert Murdoch's Weekly Standard magazine, that's read by a hell of a lot more than 20 members of the Congress. I don't think that means a heck of a lot one way or the other. It's kind of disturbed me in the promotional material saying how someone like Barbara Lee is on the tape, and the implication seems to be that Barbara Lee has in some way endorsed the conclusion that the CIA had foreknowledge of September 11th attacks. I would be astonished if that's the case. I don't believe it is the case. Mr. Rupert cited several names of people who he did in a very favorable way, including the great journalist Greg Palast, who I would be astonished to learn in any way endorses those conclusions. Greg Palast does great work. He doesn't endorse those conclusions about the CIA's foreknowledge. So I heard Mr. Rupert mention several names of people like Greg Palast, very praising him, but my mention of Noam Chomsky sparks a response saying that he's being waved as some kind of dead Christ. And then there's an innuendo immediately that Noam Chomsky, we're told, has some friendship with somebody, John Deutsch, I think we heard, who's on the board of some big corporation. And the innuendo is
Citibank.
The innuendo, Citibank. And therefore, we're hearing immediately an innuendo that says something dire about Noam Chomsky. If there's something to be said or made of that, then I would say, out with it, out with it. But, you know, I am troubled as well when I go to the website that Mr. Rupert operates. For instance, look under the heading on that website, as I did this evening, and you look at the headline in the section that says, links and additional sources, and big bold, I recommend these sources for reason and reliable information. You go down to about the fifth or sixth entry, and it says, www.drudgereport.com, and right underneath Drudge Report, it says, quote, for those who learn by checking all sources and comparing who doesn't say what, my favorite news site on the web, it leads to almost everything, unquote, from Mike Rupert. So I'm really puzzled.
Have you been to the Drudge Report?
Have
you seen what's there?
Of course.
That page links to every publication, every publication in the world. It's the great central location to go check everything out from.
If I could interrupt your interruption. When you say my favorite news site on the web is the Drudge Report, I would suggest that there are a lot of websites that I would put as my favorite one before the Drudge Report, which includes, it's like a vacuum cleaner. It vacuums up all kinds of rumors and specious reports.
Oh, come on, tell the truth here.
Specious reports. Why not commondreams.org? Why not alternet.org? Why not a whole host of progressive websites that will take you a lot of different places? Why the Drudge Report? I'm also troubled by the kind of vacuum cleaner affect where, for instance, the headline main article that is on the website, and who's the first person quoted? The first person quoted in this signature keynote article, it's Oliver North in what seems to be a favorable reference. He's kind of sounding the tone in the keynote for Mr. Rupert's entire website. Right at the top, it says, North wrote, quote, I used to wonder how many dead Americans will it take before we do something, unquote. And then Mr. Rupert goes on to say, one could look at the number of Americans Osama bin Laden is alleged to have killed before September 11th and ask the same question, unquote. So I don't understand why Oliver North is being held up out of all the people to choose to cite as a kind of clarion call for the unfinished business of the U.S., why was it Oliver North?
Boy, that shows how little you really know about me. I have given 23 years of my life to fighting CIA and drugs. I detest Oliver North, and I was using a quote that he made as an enemy of mine, as one of the vilest enemies of democracy and one of the biggest criminals in the last three decades of American history.
But
to say if an enemy says this, yes, it does.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna jump in right here. And the reason why we are having this debate tonight is to talk about facts. Talk about issues. It's easy enough to go in and check everybody's writing, et cetera, and to find something that you don't like the link, you don't like this or that. The idea, though, on both sides, is that if we go to the facts, as you are stating, Norman Solomon, that in the timeline, the facts don't add up. And this is something that's unfortunate for the audience because they don't know the timeline. But they do if they pledge their support to KPFK and take home the video, The Truth and Lies of 911. But because we are pressed for time, this is what I'm going to do, because this seems to be the big point of contention. What is the timeline? What are the facts? What does the conclusion draw to? I have them kind of loosely written out, and I'm going to fly through them, and then we're going to resume this. And when we get back to this, we're talking about facts. No more of this slinging stuff personally at each other, because you are both fantastic. We need all voices, all heads looking at this problem, and every piece of this mosaic is going to help clarify for the audience. Okay, timeline real quick. 98 through 2000, Bush goes to Saudi Arabia on behalf of the Carlyle Group. That is right before the election, of course. Bush orders the FBI to back off investigating the Bin Laden family.
Bush met with the Carlyle Group, by the way, in Saudi,
yes.
With the Bin Laden family. That's from the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, good. The NSA had already broken the encrypted files of Bin Laden, so they would, in a sense, already know in February of 2001 if there was something being planned by Osama Bin Laden. They had broken his encrypted telephone calls. $43 million was given to the Taliban for the farmers before, most likely because of the loss in the production of the heroin crops, which dropped from 3,000 tons being exported out of Afghanistan, of 3,000 tons, that dropped to 185 by the Taliban. Richard Armitage visits India. Tenet visits Pakistan. What is your point on that, Michael?
It was shortly after that General Mahmoud Ahmad of the ISI ordered an aide to wire $100,000 directly to Mohammed Atta.
German intelligence warned the U.S. government of a pending attack. July of 2001, the Russians and Pakistan were met in Berlin, and it was Tom Simmons and a couple of individuals that said that the Taliban was going to be bombed in October. The Taliban were present at that meeting. July in 2001, Kyrgyzstan, U.S. Rangers were already present in that part of Russia, training Russians, and also we had Russian officers on our soils being trained by U.S. Rangers. July of 2001, Pakistan ISI chief sends the $100,000 to Mohammed Atta via the suspect around Daniel Pearl. July 2001, Iranian Aman phones and warns the week that of 9-9, September 9th, that there was going to be an impending attack. August.
If I could just jump in on that one, for instance. I mean, do we know whether somebody called and said there'll be attack tomorrow or yesterday or last week or 2 weeks or a month ago?
Yes, we do.
I mean, well, but if it didn't happen, it isn't then cited later on in some kind of catalog of events. And I think that that's kind of a weakness of a lot of these lists, some of which are very significant and important facts. They show corporate complicity, interest in continuing to pump out as many petrodollars out of Saudi Arabia as possible. We could add that the U.S. government awarded $43 million to the Taliban last May, that Colin Powell announced that as a purported reward.
That's in the timeline.
Last May. And so we could cite that, too, and talk about that here on the air. But the reality is it doesn't prove what we're told all this adds up to, which I think is worth reiterating. The quote says that this timeline of facts, quote, establishes CIA foreknowledge of them, the mm-hmm. attacks, and strongly suggests that there was criminal complicity on the part of the U.S. government in their execution. I wonder why it is so important to springboard from this list of facts to that conclusion.
Well, Okay, do you want to respond?
That's a question which doesn't address the body of work.
No, it addresses the conclusions you draw from the body of work.
Yeah, well, you made it sound as if I had some psychological necessity to jump to some conclusion.
No, it's a question. Why do you jump to those conclusions from those facts?
I don't jump to any conclusions.
Why
I'm a trained investigator
them?
And a journalist. Those facts lead to one conclusion and one conclusion only. I mean, how many, if you have a dead body on the floor, there's a gun next to it, or there's somebody standing over the dead body holding the gun, it's smoking, and the body is dead, you can jump to a conclusion that maybe the person holding the smoking gun shot the person on the floor. That is not irrational behavior.
But I've read your list, and I don't see a smoking gun on it.
Well, a lot of other people have. Maybe you should read it again.
Well,
you
know, a lot of people reach a lot of conclusions. I think people need to decide for themselves.
Well, that's
a good
fabulous
idea.
That is a fabulous point. And that is what Pacifica is all about, which is bringing this information out so they can make those decisions for themselves. But this debate, as we continue on, is about fact. And I don't think we're going to be able to go through the rest of this and this whole line. So what I am going to do is to give each of you around a 2-minute conclusion on your points. And then, people, we have this tape here as a pledge for $120. And if this is stimulating you to go out and research for yourself, okay, if you're going to go and get this tape and you think that these conclusions are wrong, you can go out and research that for yourself, too. You can give us a call at 818-985-5735. Okay, I'm sorry. Norman, you have your first concluding comments. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I would really echo what we just said here about people making up their own minds. And I think it's very important to do that. And taking it as a logical step-by-step process, I think, is really crucial. The fact that there were benefits accrued, huge benefits accrued by the U.S. government as a result of September 11th is not proof that the U.S. government was involved in or knew specifically what was going to happen on September 11th. The fact that we had all kinds of involvement between the CIA and bin Laden in prior times before September 11th, that doesn't prove U.S. government involvement or complicity or CIA foreknowledge, to use Mr. Rupert's word, of what happened on September 11th. And when you walk through all the different facts, you find, yeah, there's a whole lot that proves that the U.S. government is sleazy, it doesn't have a lot of principles, it's willing to massacre people to benefit corporate clients that it serves, it's willing to do and has done all kinds of stuff that we know factually, without a doubt, it has done. What I question here is adding up all those facts, toting them up, and saying the sum is, the result is, we know that the CIA had foreknowledge of what happened on September 11th, because the facts don't prove that. And I also object to saying that, and here's the wording, that the facts strongly suggest that there was criminal complicity on the part of the U.S. government in their execution. I also would strongly contend that the facts don't prove that either. And we can't afford to be sloppy about this. We can't look, for instance, and cite, for instance, that the oil companies can benefit by a pipeline through Afghanistan, and then wink, wink, nudge, nudge, throw that into the pot like some illogical goulash and come up with the result that we conclude that the CIA had foreknowledge. One doesn't prove the other.
Thank you, Norman. Michael, yes, 2 minutes.
2 minutes? Come on, swing. Okay. I would ask the audience just to take 3 undisputed events into their consciousness and try to come up with some other explanation. One, Delmart Michael Vreeland, a naval intelligence officer, wrote and sealed details of the attacks into an envelope while in jail in Canada. A month before the attacks occurred, the Canadian government acknowledges that that warning was sealed and out of his custody, and it accurately described the events of September the 11th. Item number 2, the fact that on September the 11th, in direct contradiction and violation of established FAA and United States Air Force policy, which have been routinely followed for 25 years, United States Air Force fighters were not scrambled in the biggest aerial event in history, when clearly everyone should have been in direct violation of U.S. Air Force policy. And third, an incredible historical history documenting the need to tap the Central Asian oil reserves, the billions of dollars poured in by the major oil companies that they could not remove, a UNICAL pipeline, as indicated in congressional testimony, that had been on hold until the Afghani government was removed, and the fact that Hamid Karzai, the current prime minister, is a former UNICAL employee, and the pipeline is now back on, suddenly, surprise of surprises, full speed. Just take those three, and if you're satisfied that you can come up with a good explanation for those that doesn't involve some kind of foreknowledge, then maybe you shouldn't look at my site. If you're curious, then go look at my site or get the videotape and look at all the evidence and make the decision for yourself. One last thing. My evidence apparently is good enough that I'm being flown Sunday morning to Canada to do primetime television on a Canadian network to debate Ronald Atkey, the former progressive conservative politician and cabinet minister in Canada, who was head of the parliamentary committee that oversees all of Canadian intelligence. My information has apparently been vetted sufficiently enough for Canadian TV to fly me up there to debate a cabinet minister. So somebody thinks that there's information worth talking about up there. Otherwise, I don't think I'd be going.
You know what, folks? It's so compelling what we're talking about here that we're going to extend the time out. For all of you lovers of Barry Smolin's fantastic tunes that come on, just hang out. He's going to be with us just 10 minutes after he usually comes on at 8 o'clock. We're just going to continue talking and giving these guys the air to really work out and get to the bottom of what this difference of opinion is. And I'm going to go back to Norman Solomon and let you have a rebuttal again.
Sure. Well, you know, with due respect, a lot of people are on television, including national television. I mean, it's not any particular pedigree or affirmation logical drawing of conclusions to be on national television. I think that, for instance, the oil companies and their role, UNICAL and Texaco and ExxonMobil and so forth, you know, that's a good example of something which is structural in nature. It's a big factor with Occidental Petroleum being in Colombia right now and the horrendous war that the U.S. government is financing a lot of suffering inflicted just in the last few days. I think we ought to be talking about that more than progressive outlets have tended to do in the last couple of weeks. And the oil companies are looking for all kinds of openings. And I think if we go back and we analyze, for instance, the giving of the rapprochement that was perhaps, it seems, attempted last May, and the $43 million that was announced last May by Powell going to the Taliban, clearly these corporate folks had no real objection to the Taliban if it served their corporate U.S. Imperial interests. And when we are talking about these issues, I think we have got to focus, among other things, on the fact that George W. Bush, just a few weeks ago, said that the Taliban regime was one of the most evil regimes to ever be on the planet in the last century, and yet progressives and others haven't been willing or able to confront the news media and the government with the fact that if that was the case, how come the U.S. was sending them money less than a year ago? I think more fundamentally, though, we need to build a movement that's based on reasoning that doesn't have a lot of holes in it, that doesn't simply say, gee, the oil companies benefited, the U.S. government, the White House benefited from this event. Therefore, when we stack up all the ways in which there were anomalies, egregious anomalies, we stack up all the ways that people benefited, that they lied, that they had the Carlyle Group involved in Saudi Arabia, it's just a bridge that I would be fascinated if I could see how a leap over that bridge gets to the conclusions. And I'd like to hear a little bit more about how it proves this foreknowledge. It just, I just don't get it. I've read the material.
That's a good point.
It's a stretch. Such a stretch.
Okay, then that's a point. Michael, how do you come to these conclusions here?
Like I said, when you accumulate so much evidence documented from legitimate sources, I'm assuming that he takes the